Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Here's the Good News when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider. It's an insider like John Swinton, for instance. John Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft. And someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Well, Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history as an independent press. You know it and I know it, he said. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinion out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Now, the business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, and to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now, you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes, he said. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings, and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, you know, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program and the New World Order. The men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend we ought to wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, these philosophers and preachers and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order, this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's an educational, entertaining, informative way to do just that. And then, best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967 to order that free package. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. You can do it right now before you forget. All right, talking about the good news. Last week we talked about the bad news, and I gave you some god-awful bad news. In fact, I'm going to start off by giving you one more little piece of bad news here. I just got another report in yesterday. This is from an insurance underwriter, the largest insurance underwriter in the Netherlands. This is in Holland. Put out a report the other day, and they said that they expect 6,000 American banks to go upside down over the next 90 days. Now, that's 6,000 banks here in the United States because they don't have insurance. We're not talking about deposit insurance now. Banks carry insurance for a number of reasons, and most of these banks, the underwriting capacity of the insurers has been compromised. There are two of these big bank insurance companies here in the United States. Both of them are upside down. Now, that's another little piece of bad news that goes on top of the Bank for International Settlements, the Royal Bank of Scotland that I reported on last week. Now, my thesis is that there's got to be a solution to every problem. If there isn't a solution, we don't need to talk about it. In fact, it's a waste of time. You know, it's like sitting here and talking about the sun burning up, you know. What difference does it make if the sun burns up? Well, if the sun were to go out tomorrow morning, we would all die shortly thereafter. Life on the planet is dependent upon the sun. And so a debate, you know, has been going on. Well, how long has the sun been burning? Well, if you follow the evolutionary philosophy, it's been burning since the Big Bang for billions and billions of years. And yet, as I've reported to you, the sun is burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. Now, if it's burning up at 5 feet an hour, you can calculate how much more time there is for the sun to burn. The answer is about 100,000 more years. So if you went back 100,000 years, well, then the sun would be double its present size. And if you took a look at the evolutionary philosophy as it connects to the physical world, 20 million years ago, the sun would be 93 million miles in diameter, which is the distance between the Earth and the sun today. And they talk about billions and billions of years ago, say, or that the dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. Well, you know, you don't have to be real smart to put those numbers together and figure out that that don't work. That's dumb. I'm not here to argue about evolution. I'm just here to give you a couple of pointers here, you know, that there's a thing called reason, logic, and common sense. And when the common sense that we're looking at here doesn't fit in to the theory, then don't we have to alter our theory? Don't we have to kind of figure out, well, that obviously didn't work that way, so how did it work? Let's come up with a different concept or a different plan here. Now, when we talk about slavery, now, if I said to you, are you a slave or are you a free man? You know, if you're an American, you'd say, I'm free. I'm free. We talk about freedom here in the United States like, you know, it's everybody is free. I guess we learned that from Mr. Rogers. Everybody's free. Don't have any slaves here in the United States. We abolished slavery with the Emancipation Proclamation back in 1862. Well, now, is that really true? I mean, if you ask people, are you a communist? And they'll, no, I'm not a communist. I'm a capitalist. And yet, if we ask that person, well, do you send your children to public school? Well, yes, I do. Well, did you know that public school is the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto? Now, can I look at you with a blank stare? They've heard that somewhere, you know, but they've never connected those dots. And so I like to connect dots. I used to be a practicing communist. I sent my children to public school, and I'm the product of public school. So there's one-tenth of the Communist Manifesto. So I was at least a tenth of a communist. So then I took a look at all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and I pointed out to you that in reality, there's only two business models on planet Earth for us to follow. One is the ancient old Babylonian mystery religion. Today we call it the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. You can hang different names and labels on it, but it's the practice. Jesus made an observation one time. He said, you will know them by their fruits. You will know an orange tree by the fruit that it produces. It's distinguishable from an apple or a cherry or a fig or a date or a plum. So we can distinguish between slaves and freemen. There's something here that's a little different. So let's take a look at some of the attributes of slavery and compare them to what we're doing today, and let's see how free we are. How's that for a plan? We do that when we test people to see if they're communists. We measure their practice, the fruit, with the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and here in America you find that nearly everybody is practicing communism. So if we were to measure slaves and slavery and just take a look at it like we do communism over here, I guess we could come up to a pretty rational conclusion as to, well, are you a slave or are you a free man? Let's try it. A slave is owned by somebody. A slave is owned by somebody. All right, so going back to the Garden of Eden, here comes God tripping into the garden, and he created Adam and Eve. That's the report that we get from Genesis chapter 1, 2, and 3. At some point in time, he must have informed Adam, "Hey, Adam, I created you, I made you. Therefore, you belong to me. I own you. I breed cattle here. And I own those cattle. Well, at least I think I do. And if you come in here and you take one of my cattle, then you're a thief. You know, without my consent, you take one of my cows, you're a thief." And so I go to the sheriff and I say, "This guy's a rustler. He stole one of my cows over here." The sheriff comes out and he grabs you and raises hell with you, locks you up, and prosecutes you. And if we can determine that you did, in fact, steal one of my cows over here, then there's going to be a punishment for that. Now, on the other hand, I can take one of my cows and kind of do whatever I want with it. So then, does my cow then have the capacity to leave anytime she wants? And the answer is nope. That's why I keep fences up here. I keep her fenced in so she can't get away. She can't exercise the freedom of choice to leave here. So that gives you another little piece to the problem here. A slave is not free to come and go as he pleases. Does that mean that the slave doesn't eat, doesn't drink, you know, doesn't laugh and have a good time once in a while? I'm sure my cows laugh and have a good time. They jump up and down, frolic, run across the fields. And, you know, you put them into a new field to eat, and they eat, and God, they're just happy as clams at high tide. Well, how about people? How about human beings? And who owns human beings anyway? You ever stop and think about that? Who owns you? Is it the creator of the universe, or is it the state of Texas? Well, listen to this. On Friday, May 19th, 1986, that very question was put to Mr. Jim Maddox, the Attorney General of the state of Texas. Is it true that the state of Texas owns our children? And Maddox responded, "Yes, it's true. And not only your children, but you too." And this exchange took place in the Attorney General's office parking lot at 5:30 p.m. Now, I've reported that to you more than once. The Attorney General of Texas says the state of Texas not only owns your children, but they own you too. Here's Dr. Everett Sullivan. Senator Pfeiffer is a young fellow, about 38 years old. He's an attorney and legislator on the Education Subcommittee. And these parents were testifying, and Mr. Pfeiffer looked back across the table and said to this one young mother who had just testified, "Do you have a state marriage license?" And she said, "Yes, I do." Pfeiffer then said, "Hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege from the state, and that every child born to a family of a state marriage license is a ward of the state?" Ward of the state. Ward of the state. Guardian-ward relationship. Every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state. Guardian-ward relationship is a property issue. Property. Let's ask another question. Can slaves own property? Well, I remember as a young boy, my daddy gave me a bicycle, 11 years old. A brand new Ward's Riverside bike. God, just a lovely bike. $85, I remember. Now, that was in 1950. $85, a lot of money. Man making $1.75 an hour, you know, is a skilled help. I think minimum wage in those days was about 50 cents an hour, maybe 75. Well, anyway, if you'd asked me, I would have said, "Well, that's my bike." You know, if another kid like David Wagner said, "Well, whose bike is my? That's my bike. Mine. See? And I rode it all the time. Nobody else rode it. My dad didn't ride it. Well, I misbehaved one day, and my dad said, "Hey, you're grounded. You're walking. You ain't riding that bike." Now, let me ask you this. Who owned that bike, and who owned me? See, at age 11, you know, I would have thought myself as being free. You know, I was attending public school. I'd been to public school. I knew about freedom and America's history of freedom. We're always talking about freedom. And we're always talking about slavery in a negative light. Nobody wants to be a slave. Everybody wants to be free. All right, so let's take a look at this. Now, if you were born to a family here in the United States of America, and your family had a marriage license, And then they took you down and registered your birth with the state. It's the state that owns you. Now, there was a similar circumstance that occurred. Maybe you'll remember this from Sunday school. There was a fellow by the name of Moses and Pharaoh. And you read about this in Exodus chapter 1 through about Exodus 15. And Moses was sent by the creator of the universe to go talk to a fellow by the name of Pharaoh over in Egypt. And he walked in and he said, listen, let my people go. Pharaoh owned a bunch of people. Just like the state of Texas owns all those people down in Texas. Now, if you ask a Texan, are you a slave? He would say, no. No, I'm free. Here's a man that's owned by the state of Texas, and he says, well, I'm free. Free to do what? Well, free to do whatever the state of Texas allows me to do. So slaves have to be guided and directed, and they're guided and directed by law. Think about that, guided and directed by law. So in Texas, are the people of Texas allowed to drive up and down the highways with an unbuckled seatbelt? And the answer is no. No, you'll get punished now if you do. Are Texans free to drive up and down the highways without a driver's license? And the answer is no. No, you Texans all have to be approved by your master before you can engage in driving up and down highways or traveling. Are Texans subject to being stopped by authorities and inquired of? Certainly. Policemen stop Texans every day and inquire of them, are your papers in order? Give me your identification. Now, I identify my cows, and my cows are identified with a tag in their ear. Sometimes you can brand them and mark them in other ways, but it identifies the property of somebody else. And Texans are fingerprinted. They are identified, and they are routinely counted by their owner, which makes all the sense in the world. Now, going back here to this Old Testament story about Pharaoh. Pharaoh owned about 3.5 million people. Some of them were Texans back at that time, Israelites. And when Moses came in to Pharaoh, he said, well, let my people go. I'm here on behalf of, I'm an ambassador, and I'm here on behalf of, representing the interests of another sovereign. Now, this Pharaoh was a king. He was a sovereign. He was a lawmaker. That's the definition of a sovereign. He's a lawmaker. And this lawmaker, Pharaoh, also owned some property called people, and he had owned them for many, many generations. In fact, he had inherited them. He inherited these people. And he thought that he owned them and that they were his. Along comes Moses and says, no, you made a mistake here. These people belong to this other sovereign over here, this other lawmaker that we commonly call God, and he wants his property back. And Pharaoh had a pretty good claim to him. He said, well, we've had these slaves here for 430 years. And then I own them. And they're mine. And I'm in possession of them, and I'm not going to give them up. And so Moses said, well, okay, I hear you, but I've been instructed to tell you that there's going to be some plagues come down upon you. And if you don't let these people go, there's going to be a plague of flies and a plague of lice and a plague of blood in the river and so on. And so these plagues come down, and this is a contest now between two owners of the same property. And they are contesting with one another as to who owns this property. And when it was all said and done, Pharaoh gave up the claim, and he said, now you take your people and get the hell out of here. And so they got together, and they all left. Now, there was a property dispute. Now, if there was a property dispute with the state of Texas, which there is right now, down in Texas, there was a group of people down there called Mormons, and they've got children down there, and the state of Texas came in and took all those children away from those parents, and those parents down there think of those as being their children. They'd say, that's my son, John. That's my daughter, Rebecca. If you were to ask one of those parents, whose child is that? They'd say, that's my child. No, it isn't. And then the state of Texas just demonstrated that by taking them. So, slaves do not own their children. The master of the child can come and take that child away from the slave anytime he wants to. You know, come on, let's start analyzing our day-to-day routine here, and let's see, well, now, are you really free, or are you the chattel property of someone? Now, I'm the chattel property of somebody. I don't deny that. On planet Earth, there are no free men. That does not exist on this planet, and it never has existed on this planet. It is true that we use the word freedom, and it is true that you have been granted some privileges from your master. I had privileges from my owner, my master, my daddy. He let me ride my bicycle during periods of good behavior, and the state of Texas will let you drive the state of Texas automobile during periods of good behavior. But if you get into a bad behavior mode, the state of Texas, your daddy, will take your car away from you, Bobby. Now, you know that as well as I do. So this concept now that you're free to do just as you damn well please when you get damn well good and ready to do it now is a fiction, isn't it, Bobby? Huh? Come on now. Fess up. All right, now, there's some indice here that we should all be familiar with. And as we go through some of this indice over here, we can make a determination as to just how free we are. Now, some people have greater latitude with their masters than other people, but there's no such thing as a free man. The only really free person in the universe is the Creator Himself. Jesus is not that free. He Himself said that He was subject to His Father. So there's two of these gods that we know of. There could be 300 of them. I don't know how many, but I know there's two. And they're both described with particularity in the Scripture. There's God the Father and God the Son. And this guy who is God the Son is not free to just do as he damn well pleases when he's pleased to do it. And he said so very plainly. All right, so then the only other guy who is superior to this fellow that we call Jesus, who's also known as God, the Son of God, one of God's many sons. He has more than one. And he said he wasn't free. He was subject to this law. Then the only guy that would actually be free to just do as he pleases anytime he wants to with no restraints would be God the Father. And he says he's not free to do that. He said himself that he is not free to do that, and he is subject to his own law. So he's created a law, and he practices it himself. Now, that's unusual. That's unique. Here on planet Earth, the people who practice the law like to be above the law, and they don't practice it themselves. And if you take a look at Congress, you know, they enacted the Social Security Act and then exempted themselves from it. They created various laws, such as OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and then Congress is exempted from it. I don't know if you knew that or not, but there's a lawmaker that is not subject to their own laws. They create these laws, and oftentimes our Congress creates laws that are in opposition to the laws of the Creator. So this is what creates this contested issue of fact as to who is it that owns who. Who is it that can claim ownership? Contested issue of fact. That's a legal term. Now, it is a fact that the state of Texas is a sovereign entity and that it's a sovereign that makes laws. You know, that's pretty obvious. Down in Austin, Texas, there's a legislature and they enact laws. And it is a fact that there is a God in heaven and that God in heaven creates and enacts laws. And it is a third fact that these laws created by the Creator in heaven and the Creator in Austin, Texas, conflict with one another from time to time. Not all the time, but some do. And so another question of fact arises, well, which law is superior to the other? Now, here in the United States, we have settled that issue. And it's called Public Law 97-280. And we do this under a doctrine called comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y. It doesn't have anything to do with comedy, being funny, as comedy. That is, who has the power to make this decision? We also know it as jurisdiction. And so, in Public Law 97-280, the Congress said that the laws of the Creator of the universe are superior to the laws of men. Now, that's just here in the United States. I can't speak for you Russians, or you South Koreans, or North Koreans, or Japanese. You people out there, you have a different set of laws, and I don't know. I don't know what your take on the story is, but at least here in the United States, and I suspect probably in most Anglo-Saxon countries, that's the way we do business. So when we take a look at the question of slavery, that is ownership over here in the United States of America, at least as a public policy, we recognize the sovereignty or the ownership of the Creator of the universe. Now, we don't follow that law. We don't practice it. But we recognize it. And so, as a result of recognizing that law, you and I then have a choice. That's the good news. And then in Deuteronomy chapter 30, our Creator, this is the Creator now of the universe, He said that He wanted you to choose between Him and the state, Him and Baal, Him and Satan, and gave us that opportunity. He says, you know, choose now this day. I'm going to set before you life and death and good and evil. Now, make a choice here. Now, if human beings have a choice between life and death and good and evil, they will always choose death and evil over life and good. Always. Well, they've always done it in the past. And what makes you think that there's going to be a change in the future? And if people have a choice between freedom and slavery, they will almost always, not always, but almost always choose slavery. As is evidenced by the choices that we've already made. No, just the way things are. So we talk a lot about being free. You know, it's like talking a lot about being a capitalist and denying that you're a communist while you send your kids to public school and pay an income tax and use Federal Reserve notes, practicing the second, fifth, and tenth planks of the Communist Manifesto. Everybody's using Federal Reserve notes with checking accounts, and you got your kids enrolled in the public school, and that's where you came from. That's, hell, that's 3 out of 10. That's 30% of the communist program right there. How do you like that? And so the same thing is true when we talk about slavery. See, when we talk about slavery and freedom, if we take a look at who owns you, well, you've all got birth certificates, so the state of Texas owns you. And if it ain't Texas, it's California, Washington, Oregon, New York, or Pennsylvania, or somebody else. Or it could be Germany or South Korea or Japan that owns you. Now, that's bad news, but the good news is you can get your capacity back. You can get your freedom back. You can resign your citizenship with those entities. And this thing of expatriation is a right that is afforded by every country in the world. Now, I'm not so sure about China and North Korea. I mean, there might be some restrictions on you people there. But as a general rule, under the United Nations and under the laws of God, and there are choices that you can make. And so, I'm not here to encourage you to make any choices. I'm here as a reporter to report to you that there are choices for you to make. Now, you know, if you want to make them, you know, it's your choice. But I'm not here as an advocate one way or the other. It's kind of like polygamy. I report facts. And then, I don't know if you should be a polygamist or not. Hell, that's something for you to choose, not me. I made my choice. Now, let's take a look here at this guardian-ward relationship as it relates to slaves. Let's suppose for the sake of our discussion here that you joined the Army. The Army is about the best example of slave mentality that I can think of. A slave does not own property, and soldiers in the Army don't own property. They drive tanks, but they don't own those tanks. They drive Humvees, but they don't own those Humvees. They shoot guns, but they don't own the guns. They wear clothes, but they don't own them. And that's just by definition what a slave is. So if you're a soldier in the Army, you're a slave. Now, you did this voluntarily. Now, I want to make a distinction here because there's a distinction between a slave and a bondservant. It's not much of a difference, but there is a legal distinction. A slave is somebody who is captured in war and then reduced to property. Against his will and over his objection, he didn't have any choice in the matter. None. This is the way it is. Now, a bondservant is somebody who voluntarily reduces himself to chattel property, sells himself to a master. But he does it of his own free will. He does that because he chooses to. So a soldier, in legal parlance, is not a slave. He is a bondservant. And that's for a term of years. Then here in America, where we practice Anglo-Saxon administration, he can only do that for 6 years. And in the seventh year, be he free unbought. And in American law, you can only join the army for 6 years. Isn't that just special? You join for 6 years. And then in the seventh year, you can be free unbought. And then you re-enlist again. So you can enslave yourself. Now here's a very fundamental rule that we follow here in law. A free man, now let's assume that you're free, okay? Just think of this now for a second. If in fact you were free, a free man must have the capacity to enslave himself. Because if he doesn't have that capacity, then he's not free. A free man must have the capacity to enslave himself, else he's not free. All right, so let's tuck that one away in your heart and see what you think of that. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in 112 countries plus daily over the internet and radio. Now, for more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can all be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use in this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, papers, periodicals, newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. You know, just keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. However, these opinions and views, beliefs, comments, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, talking about, here's the good news. Now, a slave, if he were to recognize the fact that he were, in fact, enslaved, could then do something about that. A slave who cannot or does not recognize that he is, in fact, in bondage, can never do anything to solve his bondage problem. Can you follow the logic behind that? And here in America, we're told that we're free. just like we're told that we're capitalists and not communists. You can never change your communist status until you wake up one day and you say, oh my God, I guess I am a practicing communist. I practice these 10 planks. So once you recognize that the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for free education for all children in public school, you can do something about that. You can take your child out of public school and educate him at home, which is what you were told to do by the creator of the universe. He told you to educate your child at home. And then you woke up one day and said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to educate Mikey. I'm giving him a real education. I'm going to send him to public school. I'm not going to give him a Mickey Mouse education. I'll give him the real thing. Now, in Diefendorf versus Galay, there is a story here about property. And the same meaning appears to have attached to the term property in all subsequent taxing legislation and in the taxing practices of the executives. And we take judicial notice that income as such has never been assessed or taxed as property in the state of Idaho. And there's a case here that we talk about from time to time. It's called Hale versus Hinkle, chapter 15 here. Let me dig this out. Let me give you a citation here. The individual is entitled to stand upon his constitutional rights as a citizen, and he's entitled to carry on his private business in his own way, and his power to contract is unlimited. He owes no duty to the state or to his neighbors to divulge his business or to open his doors to an investigation, so far as it may tend to incriminate him. He owes no such duty to the state since he receives nothing therefrom. So if you receive something from the state, you owe something to the state. There's a guardian-ward relationship established. Guardian-ward relationships are a slave-master relationship, or at least a bondservant-master relationship. So, if you're in a corporate capacity, on the other hand, the corporation is a creature of the state and is presumed to be incorporated for the benefit of the public. It receives certain special privileges and franchises and holds them subject to the laws of the state and the limitations of its charter. So, if you're subject to the laws of the state, well then, you know, obey your master. Now, your creator made an observation. He says, no man can serve two masters. You can't serve the state of Texas and the God of heaven at the same time. That's just the way life is. I didn't make it that way. I'm just a reporter here, just telling you. That's the way that works. And the creator of the universe told you not to practice the law of Texas. I know your preacher told you that the creator of the universe told you to obey all the laws of Texas. Now, you know, there's a little conflict over here. Your preacher is lying to you. That's right. Your Christian preacher is lying to you when he cites Romans 13 and tells you to obey the government. And he cited that off point, not a context. Now here's the statute. And in chapter 18 of Leviticus, the Eternal, this is the creator of the universe, now spoke unto Moses, and he said, you speak unto the children of Israel, and you say to them, I'm the Eternal, your God. Now I'm your creator, I'm your owner, I'm your master. He said, I want you to go out there and you tell those people that. So now as a reporter, I just wanted to report that to you. Now you probably don't recognize that and you're not going to follow that, but I needed to report it to you. If you want to know who it is that owns you, the creator of the universe owns you. And you sold yourself into bond servitude to the state of Texas, and you didn't have the capacity to do that, and the Israelites sold themselves into bond servitude to Pharaoh, and they did not have the capacity to do that. And it caused some hard feelings a little later on when the creator of the universe came down to Egypt and says, well, I'm going to take these people, they're mine. And he got into a beef with Pharaoh over the ownership of these people. These people had sold themselves voluntarily into bond servitude. Later, Pharaoh reduced their bond servitude status to that of slave. God came along, the Creator, and he said, now I'm going to redeem you people out of bondage. And I want you to remember that, and it's called Passover. Passover is Independence Day for an Israelite. That's the day that he commanded us, to celebrate Independence Day. It's not the 4th of July or the 14th of July now. It's Passover Day. In verse 2, he said, "You speak unto the children of Israel, and you say to them, I'm the eternal your God. After the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein you dwelt, shall you not do? And after the doings of the land of Canaan, where I bring you, shall you not do, and neither shall you walk in their ordinances." Now, there's a specific instruction for you not to practice the law of Texas, boys and girls. Now, like it or lump it. And I don't expect you're going to change anything in the morning, but I'm not here to convince you that I'm right. I'm just here to report. I'm a messenger. Nothing more, nothing less. Just a crummy reporter. Now, we were told, don't do that. It's called idolatry in the Bible. First commandment says, you shall have no other gods before me, and no man can serve two masters. You'll either hate the one, love, and hold to the other, or vice versa. In verse 4, he says, you shall do my judgments, and you keep my ordinances to walk therein. I'm the eternal your God, and you shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them. Right. Now, the Congress of the United States wrote that up. Let me just flip over here briefly and see if I can find that for you. And I'll cite the statute. The United States government, through our Congress, told you that you ought to do that. It's called Public Law 97-280. Passed in three forms. It's a House Joint Resolution, Public Law, and a statute. It's the 96 Statute 1211. Whereas the history of our nation clearly illustrates the value of voluntarily applying the teachings of the Scriptures in the lives of individuals, families, and societies. That's the United States Congress. They said, now, the history of our nation clearly illustrates the value of voluntarily applying the teachings of the Scriptures in the lives of individuals, families, and societies. Now, Congress did not order you to follow the instructions of the Scripture. They don't have that power. First Amendment prohibits that. It's called an Establishment Clause. And they didn't. They just told you it was a good idea and you ought to do it. Now, the U.S. Supreme Court ratified that concept in a case called Seeger versus United States. I'm going to give you that case over here so you can cite it in case you want to read it. It's cited at 380 U.S. 163, called Seeger, S-E-E-G-E-R, United States versus Seeger. And in this is kind of a neat story over here. The parties raised the basic question of the constitutionality of the section which defines the term religious training and belief as used in the Act as an individual's belief in a relation to a supreme being involving duties superior to those arising from any human relation. So the Supreme Court recognizes that you and I and everybody else in the world, whether you're a Chinaman living over in China or you're a Korean living in Korea or a Japanese or a Brazilian or American or, you know, wherever you live, you are created by this Creator and you have a duty to this guy. You know, whether you knew it or not or whether you like it or lump it, you know, that's your choice in life, but you got this duty. And here in the United States, and I suspect you Canadians and Australians got the same duty, probably have the same law, just located in a different location, a different way, that recognizes a paramount duty that we owe to our Creator as opposed to the state. Now, we have a choice. You can obey God or you can obey Texas or Australia or New Zealand or whoever you want to. Now, most people, when given the choice, you know, buckle your seatbelt, get a driver's license, and register your car, they'll obey the laws of the state. But when there's a choice, you know, like thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, and you shall have no other gods before me, now people will not practice those laws. And as a result of that, they became the slaves then of the state as opposed to the slaves or the chattel property of their Creator. Now, as I mentioned earlier, everybody is a chattel property of somebody, and you've got that choice. If you want to join the Army and be the chattel property of the United States Army or Marines, you can do that. It's not a very wise choice. And your Creator told you not to do that, but then, you know, what does He know? You know, God told you not to go surety, you know, for people and sign on the dotted line and guarantee their debts, you know, but, you know, people do it every day of the week. It's not very wise, but, you know, people do it. All right, now let's take a look at a couple of attributes here of slaves and slavery over here. For instance, you know, we're taking a look at a slave. Does a slave have the capacity to travel anywhere he wants at any time for any cause or reason? And the answer is no. No, he doesn't. A slave has to have permission from his master in order to travel someplace. Now just take a look at where you're living and what you do, what country you live in, and then ask the question, do you have the unfettered right to travel? And then by whatever means or mode that you desire, I mean, we could even add that in. And the answer is, in most cases, no. No, you don't. You have to have a driver's license, or you have to have a passport, and then you have to have travel papers or documents or a visa or something to travel. And to the extent that you have to have this permission by some superior authority, it diminishes your capacity. That's all. There was a time in America before passports. 1952 is when we came up with the passport idea. And if you wanted to travel someplace, you could do so with just about anybody you wanted and any place you wanted. I can remember buying airplane tickets and traveling, and nobody asked me for identification. Today, you can't do that. And it identifies your master, and it identifies your status of travel. Here's an old adage that maybe you've heard or maybe you haven't. It says, gold is the currency of kings. Gold is the currency of kings. Silver is the currency of gentlemen. Barter is the currency of peasants. And debt is the currency of slaves. Now just ask yourself, what kind of currency do you use? Gold, silver, barter, or debt? If you're using fiat paper currency, which most people in the world do, that's a condition of slavery. That free men don't use debt. Free men use gold. Kings use gold. Free men, I should say, use silver. But are you using gold or silver? Are you using commodities, or do you use debt? So I just took that one away. Slaves do not come and go as they please. They have to have permission. Slaves are licensed. No, a license is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal, unlawful, a tort, or trespass. Now, if you want to know where you get the most freedom, now slaves have some freedoms. And the Bible, the Ten Commandments, and the laws of God are called the perfect law of liberty. Now, that was called the perfect law of liberty by your Creator. He said this, everybody has to have some laws and guides to go by. We have to have a law that says, thou shalt not steal, in order to establish your property rights. Now, the first plank to the Communist Manifesto calls for the abolition of all right to property. So here you can see these two lawmakers, and these two systems of law are at diametric opposites. They're exact loggerheads. One, the Ten Commandments guarantees your right to property. The other destroys your right to property. Now, a slave owns no property. As a matter of law, a slave cannot own property. Neither can a bondservant. Bondservants, they don't have property. A man who has a wife has property. A man who has a concubine has property. A woman who has a husband has property. But a concubine does not have a property right in her husband because her children cannot inherit. A concubine is a bondservant. She's a wife, but she's a wife with less stature. All right, you can be a slave, then you can have certain privileges and franchises. They're called civil rights. But they're not quite as good as your right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness or property. Now, your Creator gives you life, He gives you liberty, and He gives you property. And then the communists come along, that is your state, your government, and they take away your property, and they take away your life. They reduce your life. And they also restrict your liberty. Now, liberty is also restricted by your Creator. You don't have an absolute right now to unfettered liberty
That is to go over here and sleep with your neighbor's wife. I know that's an interference with your pursuit of happiness. But there's a law here that says you can't do that. And so there's a limitation on that liberty, that right, that desire that you may have to have sexual relations with your neighbor's wife. You're prohibited from doing it. State comes along and says, oh no, we're not going to prohibit that at all. Go out and have sexual relations with your neighbor's wife. Now there's a result that comes from it called divorce. And this divorce now affects about two-thirds of Americans. Two-thirds. Now, your God, that is your Creator, gave you the capacity to have 2, 5, or 9 wives. That's called polygamy. The state came along, took that right, liberty, or that capacity away from you. They said, no, you can only have one wife at a time. Now, your God said He was going to give you every green herb, and it shall be for meat for you. Well, it happens that heroin poppies are green. Cocaine is green, and so is marijuana. Now, your God gave you cocaine, heroin, and marijuana. Well, at least He gave you the plants. He didn't give you the drugs, but He gave you the plants. Now, the state comes along and says, no, you can't have those. So I just ask you, you know, you decide for yourself, which do you think is the better law of liberty? The one that says that you can have every green herb, or the one that says, no, you can't? And somebody's going to decide that for you. Now, a slave does not have capacity for free choice. Now, in Texas, you do not have the free choice to decide for yourself whether you should buckle your seatbelt or not. That's not left to you. That's not for your option. See how that works? Now, the God of heaven does not command you to buckle your seatbelt. It may be true that buckling your seatbelt is wise. It may be helpful and beneficial. It may be wonderful for you. It may be true that you people cannot handle heroin poppies and cocaine and marijuana. And you need a guardian to take those away from you, because if they weren't taken away from you, you would abuse them. That's probably true. I don't know. The definition for a slave is somebody who is in bondage to. So you look up the word slave here. It says a person who is owned by another person and has no freedom at all. A person who is completely controlled by a habit and influence, such as a slave to fashion or a slave to drugs or alcohol. And that's true. And so back in this country, back in the 1920s, we created a prohibition against alcohol. You didn't get that from God in the Bible. God gave you wine and strong drink and told you at the Feast of Tabernacles you should drink wine and strong drink. Did you know that? Well, I know the Christians tell you that you're not supposed to do that because you're going to go to hell and burn forever. But in Deuteronomy chapter 14, I think I can find that for you. Be patient with me because I'm just a plumber. I haven't been to cemetery. See if I can find it here. And you shall bestow, verse 26, you shall bestow that money for whatsoever your soul lusts after, for oxen or for sheep or for wine or strong drink or for whatsoever your soul desires, and you shall eat there before the Eternal your God, and you shall rejoice, and you shall attend with yourself and with your household. This is the Feast of Tabernacles. Your God tells you, you know, of course you people practice Christmas, you know, most of it. But there's a festival that this Christmas is a counterfeit of the Feast of Tabernacles. I don't know if you knew that or not. Counterfeit. And then God told you to go out and drink. But drink responsibly. You know, you ought to, you shouldn't get walleye drunk, but you know, you should drink wine and strong drink, you know, in moderation. Christians can't do that. They can't drink in moderation. They can't drink at all, period. That's why they're they believe in abstinence. So they don't want to drink, period. Now, the God of heaven, he thought, you know, you people could probably drink and probably learn how to do it in moderation. In fact, he thought that'd be a good idea if you'd learn how to do that. And that's what freedom is all about. And that's the difference between slavery and freedom. It's to give you an opportunity to make a choice for yourself. And sometimes you'll make the wrong choice. You'll drink too much and get walleye drunk. You know, you'll make the wrong choice and you'll have to pay a penalty for that. But that's what freedom is. You know, freedom is where you have a choice to make and you make that choice. Slaves don't have that. It's made for them. buckle your seatbelt, get your driver's license, register your car, drive 55. Let's try the income tax. See, the income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. We were told to tithe. You voluntarily give 10% of your increase to God, the creator of the universe. That's called tithing. That's what you were instructed to do. Most of you people don't tithe, but you do pay income tax, and you pay that to your master, your God, the state. Not in Texas, but here in the United States, we pay income tax. Five states don't have an income tax. All right, so if you're practicing the income tax and you're practicing the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, do you own your home? No. The bank owns your home. And if you think you own it and you're not paying a mortgage on it, you're paying property tax on it. You're paying your fee to the owner of the property. You're living in your master's house. You don't own that. Slaves don't own property. And here in the United States, there aren't very many people that own very much property. There are some that own some property, but not very many. And here's the good news. Anytime you want to own property, you can. But you have to pay for it with gold. Now, your creator told you that you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And your state now comes along and says, no, you should use paper money. Forget that gold and silver crap. Let me give you a gold card. Gold card? No, that's not gold. That's plastic. It's a plastic card. We call it a gold card, and you can go out here and you can buy, sell, and trade with it. And then your master will keep track of all of your purchases. Well, that's what masters do. They keep track of where their servants, their slaves, spend their money. And then they tax them and take certain percentages of their servants' labor. Now, the creator of the universe said he wanted you to do that voluntarily. And so tithing is voluntary. The income tax is voluntary, but you know, once you volunteer, then it becomes mandatory, and furthermore, it becomes punishable, and you get locked up in jail. So if you're paying an income tax, you're practicing the second plank to the Communist Manifesto. And if you're using paper money, you're practicing the fifth plank. And if you've got a property tax on your house and you don't own your house, then you're living in your master's house. And then your property, you know, you're practicing the first plank, which calls for the abolition of all right to property. Now, as you practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, you're practicing the law of slavery. When you practice the 10 commandments, now you're practicing the perfect law of liberty. Now, choice is yours to make. I'm not telling you that you should practice the 10 commandments. I don't know if that's good for you or not. Why don't you decide for yourself? I'm not here to tell you not to join the army or the police force or the fire department. You know, if you want to be a sergeant, somebody under authority who salutes smartly and says yes sir and no sir, or sir yes sir, or sir yes sir, or sir no sir, that's your choice in life. And if you want to do obeisance to somebody, that's a choice that you need to make. But that's a choice that you ought to make as a free man, don't you think? Well, I'm about out of time here, kids. I've got to make a choice here, so let me make my choice and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. And The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet and radio daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing. Of course, so until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.